group left. Tough shot. Made it. End of the line.
Bad pass. Tipped away, and Indiana's got it. Up the floor to Oladipo. He will lay up. Scored! Jones. Westbrook for the win. Yes!
It's Indiana. It's Indiana.
What's going on, everyone? Greg Rosenstein here, as always, joined by Matt Dollinger, podcast on the Brink. We have a big show for you today. John Infante of the Bylaw blog is going to be on, and the Herald Times' beat reporter, Dustin Jopirak. But first, Matt, what did you think about the elections last night?
Well, I was up pretty late watching, but the payoff was worth it. Obama gave a pretty good speech to end the night, but obviously, there was also some bad news last night for IU fans. I think that's the quickest I've ever seen the Sports Illustrated cover jinx go into effect.
I've never seen anything like that. It's pretty crazy. For those who didn't hear, freshman Peter Jerkin and Hunter Perea are both going to be forced to sit out the first nine games, and they'll both be required to pay money to a charity of their choice because they received impermissible benefits from a Indiana University booster. But the booster is who, Matt?
Mark Adams, you know, a guy I've known for a while in Bloomington. Many people know him because he runs the A Hope Foundation and also Indiana Elite. And I'm sure everyone's heard by now, but the sticking point was the $185 he gave to the IU Varsity Club between 1986 and 1992. And it really added a little salt to the wound when, I heard from Dustin on Twitter that the reason, Hunter and Peter were going to have to sit out was because of bumper stickers.
That's just ridiculous. Is this the dumbest thing you've ever heard?
It's pretty close. I mean, I totally understand that, you can't have a booster involved in a program or anything. I mean, no one's debating that. But if that's what makes you a booster these days, I'm pretty sure you and I are probably boosters.
Well, I don't know how much I've actually donated to the school because I'm a poor college graduate. But
I've popcorn at games before. I own items of clothing that are crimson. I mean, that might be enough.
So basically $1 will qualify you as a booster.
It's what it seems like. And, I think it's probably setting a dangerous precedent, too. And, I mean, If that makes you a booster, there's probably more, boosters around the country and people involved in every basketball program that shouldn't be involved in them.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think this makes sense. Think about how many, I don't know, I can't even think of that many, but think about some of these former athletes that have their kids become athletes and go to that school. I mean, I'm just thinking like, Mike Golick went to Notre Dame, played at Notre Dame, and now his kid's playing there, his multiple kids there. You don't think he donated any money? So shouldn't Notre Dame have to give up all those games?
It's one of those things that IU might have never have heard anything about if they hadn't self-reported it. And, they kind of brought it to the NCAA's attention. But on the other hand, if you don't self-report it, maybe, Hunter and Peter don't play this year. Who knows what the punishment would have been then? So, that kind of, is another thing that I'm sure is angering IU fans this morning.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is it is only nine games where I guess you never know with the NCAA, and it could have been the whole season for, whatever they dug up. So I think it doesn't have that much of an impact. I think Hunter's still injured. So, it might not even matter for him as much. But I think it does hurt depth. And, they do have UNC, I think, in those first nine games. And I think you also have the Legends Classic. So you're going to be playing some good teams, and you're going to need that post-depth. And now it's gone. What do you think about the overall impact?
Oh, I think it's huge. Kareen was on Sirius last night talking about a little bit, but IU all of a sudden goes from a deep team to a team that has no depth up front. This really makes Elston's injury that much more painful. IU's two big men on the bench right now are Jeremy Hallowell, who's really more of a small forward, and Jeff Howard, who I don't think anyone was anticipating was going to be logging a lot of minutes this season. So I think you're going to see a lot of small lineups now these first nine games. Probably, Sheehy playing the four, maybe Zeller and Watford not playing as much together, but really just is a huge blow to IU's team. And, it is only nine games. As you say, they'll be back before the Big Ten season, but there's a lot of games before that will really determine whether IU can keep that number one ranking throughout the year. So definitely a huge blow. How about you?
I mean, I agree completely. I mean, everything you just said, I agree on. It just, you know, post-depth, it really hurts it. I mean, think about it. What if Zeller has to come out of the game? Who do you put in there? Like you said, you're going to have to have a small lineup, or you're going to have Jeff Howard at the center position, or shift somebody out of position just to get that to work. I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens, and I'm kind of interested to see what Dustin has to say.
It's very realistic, you know, that Cody's going to get two fouls early in some of these games. I mean, everybody in the country is going to be game planning for him. Everybody's going to be going at him. You know, he's obviously one of the best offensive big men in the nation, but if there is one area he may be, you know, still lacks in, it's defense. So, I mean, they are going to be, you know, teams going at him, trying to get him in foul trouble, trying to expose IU as, you know, the not deep team it once was. So it's definitely a big problem. And then the other thing from this news, which I can't believe we're already 6 minutes in and haven't touched about, is Tijon. Everything comes back to Tijon. IU was also fined $5,000 for the games Tijon played. And personally, I say it was well worth it, but, you know, it's still... looks like our buddy had his legacy tarnished a little bit.
I saw it says $5,000 a game. How many games did he play in?
It was $5,000 a game or $5,000 total?
Oh, maybe it was $5,000 total.
That fee would be worth it as well. I mean, you can't really put a price on Tijon, but, you know, it just...
Yeah, but basketball-wise, I had the same impact as Tijon, and I didn't play a game.
IU was also fined $5,000 for every game you covered the team. Yeah, that was in the small print at the bottom of the release.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah, you know, it just seems petty. You know, I saw Justin Albers, Jay Billis, a few other people use the word absurd to describe it. It just seems petty to me. It just, you know, IU is extremely paranoid when it comes to these types of things, and for good reason. I still remember, you know, everything coming down from the Kelvin Sampson era when I was on the beat, and it's hard to believe that IU would get in compliance trouble again, but when you consider that this is what got them in trouble, you know, it just seems a little bit unfair.
Well, think about it. These in the press release, didn't it say that that if he didn't donate that $185 for stickers, all the benefits that he gave, which was the laptop, the housing, and all that, it would be completely fine because any normal guardian would do that for their kid, correct?
Sure, yeah. And, I mean, another thing that I think Crean pointed out last night, too, is if Mark Adams was a booster, Emmanuel Negedu would have definitely come to IU. I mean, his career was cut short, which was, you know, tragic, but he was a blue-chip recruit, and he was definitely looking at IU. So, you know, it's the bottom line is Mark Adams has, you know, the best interest of these kids. I mean, he's Honor's legal guardian, and, you know, you look at the things that he gave those kids through his foundation, and it's anything any parent would have given to their child. It's nothing, you know, elaborate. We're not talking about jewelry or cars here or, you know, anything like that. These are basic needs, and these kids, you know, come from places where they didn't have those things, and it's just sad that they're being punished for this. You know, I think even though Mark Adams is in the right here, he should be the one that's punished. He's the one who they're telling us is a booster. To punish Honor and Peter for accepting clothing and plane tickets and food, that seems ridiculous.
Plus, these all happened like before these guys were even born. It's just the whole thing is stupid to me.
Yeah, we could pile on this for days, and we might do it just in this podcast. But let's take a short break, get our first guest on the line, Dustin Dopierak from the Herald Times. He was all over this story last night, and I have a feeling he's got some interesting things to tell us. So let's take a quick break. We'll be back with Dustin. All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. We are now joined by our first guest and good friend of the show, Dustin Dopierak from the Herald Times. Dustin, how are we doing this morning?
Doing good, man. How about you guys?
We're doing well. You know, we are still reacting to the news from last night. Obviously, President Obama being reelected was not the biggest story in Hoosier country. you were all over this story last night. Can we just, you know, start off by talking about your reaction and everything you were doing last night?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I really sort of look at it. I mean, you know, when the thing hit, we sort of knew that it was coming for most of the day and sort of been, you know, gone around that some type of decision was going to come out. And, you know, you kind of had an idea what it had to be about. I mean, like, you know, there was not really anything else really to consider other than, you know, Mark Adams and some of the stuff that had originally surfaced a few years ago or a year and a half ago with the Mike Fish investigation. And I guess you always just kind of wondered, okay, what is that going to be? Is that going to, you know, cause any actual problems? And I just found it comical what the sticking point was, that literally everything was legal, you know, that he'd okayed everything, that, like, all the benefits that he'd given, you know, Hunter Perea and Peter Jerkin and Tijon Jobe, I mean, like, you know, it's theoretically thousands of dollars worth of benefits, because, you know, it was actually because he's a non-scholastic coach that he's allowed to do that, not necessarily because of the Aholt Foundation, but everything was through the Aholt Foundation. And, you know, all of that was all right, all that was cleared. He'd gone to the NCAA, told them everything he was giving them, and they approved it. And all of a sudden, simply because, you know, of $185, none of that's legal. And that $185 was simply because his wife wanted to buy it, like, this sort of alumni sticker for the back car window. And, you know, every single one of those stickers was bought and paid for before this Peter Jerkin was born. And he's the oldest of the two. And, like, that, the irony there is just sort of crazy. You know, just that's the sticking point. And I think, you know, that I think is everybody's reaction, that, like, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about $185 given 20 years ago, and yet this guy is still considered a representative of athletics interest. And, you know, the base core principle of the idea is, you know, hey, you can't have boosters giving kids money, and, you know, that makes logical sense. But if you're telling me, it just seems like there's got to be a statute of limitations of what constitutes a booster. If this is that, then that's a little bit nuts.
Plus, you got to think that there's so many other cases where probably an alumni paid for their kid to do whatever. I mean, I don't know. I feel like if the NCAA just started, like, digging a little harder, like, there's going to be way worse things than this.
Yeah, well, I mean, the principle of the thing here, though, is that I think everybody thinks, like, why was the NCAA focusing on this? Why were they investigating this? They weren't. You know, the NCAA didn't have to, you know, undergo an investigation here. This was self-reported. And, you know, I mean, that's the way to go with most things. If you self-report things, the penalty will probably be significantly less than if they were to catch you. And you sort of have to operate on this sort of good faith principle of, hey, if you know something, you know, tell the NCAA, because if they find out about it later, you're in worse trouble. And, you know, even if you're probably going to get away with it, just tell them. You know, just do it, just get it over with. And the issue here is that, you know, Mark Adams had disclosed all the relevant information. There was one, I think, assistant athletic director for compliance who never passed that up the ladder until 2011. I mean, he knew about it in 2008 when Indiana was signing Tijon Jobe. You know, Mark Adams said, hey, you guys should probably know, I did donate so much money to the booster club, to varsity club until 1992. You know, that assistant athletic director said, oh, yeah, that'll be a big deal, that's fine. And then finally, you know, for whatever reason, not sure exactly what compels him to do it, but, you know, did pass the information up the ladder. This wasn't the NCAA doing an investigation yet. There's plenty more that they could find if they dig. I mean, they've got a pretty big caseload in terms of what they're going after and what they're deciding to pursue. You know, again, this is not something that, you know, that they had to go find. Indiana decided on their own, hey, we know this, we're not going to lie about it, we're going to make sure the NCAA has it now, apply for reinstatement. I think they would have, they are surprised, I think, that it's this big of a suspension. But you self-report a secondary violation, and I don't know that you'd expect it to be this sort of heavy of a game suspension.
You know, Dustin, you spoke with Mark Adams last night after the news, and he's a guy you've interviewed plenty of times over the past couple of years, a guy, you know, that's really not been involved directly with the IU program, but seems to come up in a lot of recruiting stories, and just, you know, a guy around Bloomington that if you're in the basketball community, you know. What's your take on, you know, Mark Adams as a whole? Do you think this is really just a good guy who got in trouble for, the, you know, the wrong reasons? Or do you think, you know, it might be something else? Maybe you thought he was always, you know, maybe a little too close to the program?
That's a tough question. I think he's generally a genuine guy. You know, I mean, like, you obviously, you know, people point out that, like, you know, wow, he's bringing all these people, you know, players over from war-torn countries. Well, obviously he's not bringing anybody that's just, like, you know, a cello player or something like that. Like, everything, he's obviously in one particular line of work, and it does sort of, you know, help his cause and help his status and stuff like that. And, like, you know, whether or not, I mean, I think his son was legitimately qualified for his job at Indiana, and obviously it wasn't like it was, you know, a top-of-the-line assistant job. He got it as a video coordinator or director of basketball systems. It was an entry-level job, and Drew Adams was qualified for an entry-level job. You know, but all that, you know, all this kind of helps his cause. The fact that he's, you know, that he's bringing these players over and that he's an AAU coach and stuff like that. I mean, it helps his profile. But, you know, a lot of it is sincere. You know, like, mm-hmm. you know, obviously it costs a lot of work. It costs a lot of his time and his money. You know, he's devoted a lot to what he's built. You know, like, you can sit there and go back and forth on his intentions, but, I mean, just what he's doing is generally good stuff. He's generally helping, you know, genuinely helping people. And, you know, with this, I mean, like, it's not like he's necessarily in trouble, you know, like, right. Even if you look at what's on the list of things that he gave him, 90% of the stuff on there is sort of basic living stuff, mm-hmm. you know, like, especially when it comes to even laptops and stuff like that. I mean, you know, that was one of those things where I think everybody that was in those schools got a laptop, you know, like, I think everybody at La Laporte had, you know, was walking around with a laptop, and it's just like, you know, according to Mark, he got, you know, got the guy sort of the most basic, you know, cheap bottom of the line laptop that, you know, that he could get him and stuff like that. But I mean, like, he took all this stuff to the NCAA, everything that he was buying them. He said, you know what, I've had meetings with them. I've been on a conference call with the NCAA, with Indiana's compliance and legal representation in the room. They knew everything I was doing. And, you know, he disclosed this thing, you know, before he gave them every information. You know, he's given them information that they didn't even require. You know, he's gone out of his way to say, hey, everything I'm doing here is on the up and up. You know, like, I'm not cheating. I'm not trying to make these kids ineligible. I'm doing everything I can. And it's just sort of a blip that turns out to be the reason. And I guess the thing about it is like, does it make any sense for somebody who's, like, I guess, really a young alumni? I mean, it was, like, probably 5 or 6 years out. You know, I don't know when exactly he got married, but it was probably within a couple of years of that, just literally to buy, like, a car sticker, you know, that deems him a booster for the rest of his life, and therefore anything that involves, you know, working with recruits or players and stuff like that, he's theoretically out of. You know, like that doesn't make a lot of sense. It's like if he would have stopped doing what he was doing or not done what he's been doing because of, you know, that donation, and, you know, actually would have had to keep these kids from going to Indiana, that would make a lot of sense. You know what I mean? Like, again, I think even the penalty, it still makes more sense for him to do what he's done, you know, and continue doing it, I guess, and sort of deal with these penalties than to have not done it. And, you know, it's just sort of a goofy NCAA thing that just leads to, you know, problems for a lot of different people. And the rule, I guess, makes some degree of sense in its basic form, but, you know, this is kind of, I think, you know, an issue where you sort of have to use common sense here.
Now, with that said, A-Hope produces, you know, Division I players every year, basically. Not necessarily at Indiana,
top of the line.
All over the country. But
yeah.
do you think, like, this would hurt Indiana's, you know, recruiting, you know, with players through that program? Do you think they're going to cease to do it because they're going to get a violation no matter what from now on, correct?
I don't know. I think that's maybe. Unless, like, Mark sort of disavows himself from it. And there's obviously other people to run that. You know what I mean? Like, there's obviously, you know, Bill Delaney is still involved in it, and there's other people that are kind of part of the board. I mean, I think what would have to happen is Mark would have to cease sort of funding it, and he would kind of have to step aside from it. You know, I think that would be the only way that, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know exactly how this works. I'd have to actually check in. I probably should, you know, gives me an idea. I probably should call Mark today. But, you know, I think that's the question. I mean, I think if Mark stays on the board, then it, you know, becomes a then it stays a violation. I mean, to be honest, I don't know how often they were to go down that path to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even just for sort of like the talent level. I mean, obviously, I think the only guy, you know, Jurgen sort of makes sense as well. But, like, you know, Perea is at a higher class than most of what's come through that. I mean, like, the guys they were getting before were Tijon and Bawa. You know, in most cases, at the very least, it's guys who don't have great skill development yet. I mean,
bite really, your tongue.
Come over.
Bawa had an amazing chant. My all-time favorite chant. Bawa. Bawa.
Tijon forever. I don't know why I even said that, but you know, they had to go. Obviously, they were in a position where they had to get a lot of players, and they were going after guys with big upside. That, you know, if you could develop them, they could turn into players. Obviously, Indiana's in a position right now where they can afford to get guys who are more immediately refined. So maybe they weren't going to go down that well as much anyway. But, you know, if 6 years from now, 5 or 6 years from now, there's another Perea, there's another Jerkin, you know, they would have to, at the very least, think twice about going after them in the, you know, they'd have to consider whatever situation Mark would still be in with them, because this does continue forever. Mark Adams is a booster forever because of this division, unless the NCAA changes the rule.
Right. How about, you know, Friday's opener and the first 9 games for IU now, really was a pretty sobering moment last night when you looked at IU's roster and you realized Hunter and Peter weren't going to be able to play. How much are you worried about the Hoosiers front court now, and what do you think this kind of does to their rotation?
Well, there's no depth there. It's the biggest thing. I mean, like, what they really have to do, I mean, this requires them to play small whenever they have to pull Cody out of the lineup. And it also requires Jeff Howard to play basketball. I mean, it's at that point, if it's 9 games and they're both out, at some point, Jeff Howard is going to have to play significant minutes. You know, there's no other way around it. You know, I think in some cases, obviously, they'll be able to move, you know, Watford at the 5, but Hollowell at the 4, and just play a really fast lineup, and that'll work against a lot of teams that are going to play. You know, obviously, the fortunate part about this is it comes to the top half of the schedule. You know, they have 9 games. You know, there's the North Carolina game where this could be a big problem. This could be a major, major issue. But other than that, you're dealing with, and obviously, if they end up playing UCLA in the second round of a Legends Classic, it's significant there too, because they've got some bigs. Georgetown's got some guys who they played in there. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to have an issue other than that, because there's a lot of teams that are going to be smaller than them anyway. But it forces them to play fast. I mean, they're going to have to play with, you know, again, whenever Zella comes out, it'll have to probably be, you know, the Hollowell and Watford inside, and, you know, occasionally Jeff Howard to take up some minutes. You know, they're going to have to get by with playing fast. That's just the way it goes. Unless, you know, the other hope is that Derek Elston gets back from the meniscus tear fast. I mean, because I don't think it would have been a major problem if they didn't have Elston. If they were able to kind of put him there and he was able to take up their minutes, I think they would have been mostly fine, you know, Parade and Jerkin are guys that you would want to have. You know, one issue is that these guys just don't get to show off like mm-hmm. they would have had. You know, they would have gotten the ability to, you know, they're going to get in line, you know, closer to conference play. Parade is still battling his foot injury anyway, so you weren't sure what he's going to get back. And this was going to be, those first 9 games were going to be a good opportunity for them to sort of get their feet wet and get an idea of what college basketball is like. You know, there were going to be some teams they were going to rout. You were going to see them just get to make some highlight real plays and sort of dunk over some people. And they don't get that time to become more comfortable. And that's just I think, as significant as how much it cost them in depth in these first 9 games. But even if it cost them the Carolina game, you know, they're not going to be in huge trouble from that point on. You know, like, they're still going to get by this in pretty good shape. But it is significant for some of those bigger non-conference games at the beginning of the year.
I mean, think about what Jeff Howard is thinking about right now. He's going to probably have to go against James Michael McAdoo, and then he's probably going to get eaten by Josh Smith if they play UCLA. So
that is a question. That's a concern he's got to be worried about. He might have to run.
Yeah.
He might have to
get physically eaten by Josh Smith.
I think Crane's probably thinking about that today, too.
Yeah.
Josh Smith is bigger than DeAndre Thomas.
Yes, not current DeAndre Thomas. Can you imagine how big current DeAndre Thomas is right now? Yeah. When's the last time he had to run up and down a floor?
Yeah. Do you think when was the last time he took an aggressive step, do you think?
Yeah.
Like,
that would be wild.
Dustin, have you heard anything more about Elston's injury? Obviously, this is much bigger without Jerkin and Prey in the lineup now.
Yeah, nothing new. I mean, obviously, he had, you know, surgery was apparently successful. And, you know, I think more and more of these injuries come out on the front end of, you know, recovery, especially when you're getting, you know, when you're having surgery. You know, this usually doesn't keep you up that long, but it's usually a month, you know, more or less, usually a month to 2 months. You know, maybe, I think there's a fair to decent possibility that he gets back before they return, but probably not much before. I mean, I'd be surprised if he's back before the Carolina game. You know, that would be really, really surprising, because that's a month. I mean, I think it was right around, what, October 24th, 23rd, you know, I mean, I think surgery was a few days after Big Ten Media Day, because that's sort of when the story broke, was Big Ten Media Day. So, you know, I think that puts you right around, you know, 1 month puts you at the end of November, 2 months puts you at the end of December. So it's somewhere in there. I mean, it's a possibility that he gets back before the Butler game, but not much before. I'd be really surprised if he gets back before, before those two, the critical games, the Legends Classic and also Carolina.
No, there's never really a boring beat or a boring day on the IU beat. And Dustin, we appreciate you coming on the show and lending your knowledge and kind of giving us the inside scoop on everything. I know you got a busy day ahead. You'll be speaking to Crane tomorrow, you think, before the Bryant game?
It's open. I mean, I think, one thing that sort of surprised me or makes me think that won't happen is before the exhibition game, when we obviously had Perea and certain questions. He didn't come out for that one. We talked to Steve McClain for that one. So I don't know if he's trying to, use more assistance for that. But, I mean, it's the opener. You'd have to think he'd be willing to come out. I think Tom's going to be on Don Dockage today at about 1:30. So we'll obviously go to check in to see what he says there as well. So, I mean, I'm sure he'll have a lot to say about this within the next week or so.
Good stuff. Matt. Oh, yep, Greg.
Matt, this is big news. Dustin surpassed 25,000 words on this interview.
Wow. Have you been counting? Is that why you've been so quiet?
I've been trying to track it. It's been hard. He's at like, 1.5 words per second, and I don't know how he did it, but he did it. It was amazing.
I'm always impressed with Dustin regardless, so.
Wait, Dustin, are you going to be in New York next week?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
Yes, indeed. Brooklyn for the Legends Classic.
I'll be up there. I'm helping inside the Hall cover a little bit.
Outstanding.
Sounds good. Well, Dustin, thanks again for coming on. We'll let you go. Appreciate it. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to be with John Infante from the Bylog blog. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. We're now joined by our second guest. Couldn't be happier to have him on the program, John Infante from the Bylog blog on athleticscholarship.net. You guys know him, one of the experts around the country on the NCAA and compliance, and really looking forward to hearing what he has to say on last night's news. John, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
Oh, we're doing well. You know, we just got off the phone with Dustin Dopierak from the HT, who kind of talk to us a little bit about what this is going to do to the Hoosiers in their first 9 games, but really wanted to get your take on the NCAA's ruling last night with Hunter Perea and Peter Jurkin having to sit out 9 games. Were you a little bit surprised at the length of the suspension handed down by the NCAA?
Not really. That would be consistent with extra benefit violation of the amounts they were talking about. I know, you had similar cases with Josh Selby at Kansas, where it was kind of in that more than $5,000, less than $10,000 range, and his was also a 9-game suspension. So they've kind of made that the standard for these significant but not overwhelming extra benefit cases.
Have you ever just seen a ruling like this before? I guess what are kind of comparable cases to this?
I mean, the Selby case is one. In a way, it kind of mirrors what's going on with Shabazz Muhammad, although, the issues there are a little different in that, the question is whether or not the guy he's connected to is an agent rather than, whether or not the guy that Perea and Jurkin were connected to is a booster. Selby's another one on a smaller scale, John Wall was another one, but these cases where, you have a AAU coach or, sometimes even a high school coach who is very close with the athlete and is providing, benefits that go beyond helping them pay to play their sport, which in a lot of cases now is like unofficial visits and helping out in the recruiting process, but can include, living expenses.
Back to something a second ago, I think IU fans were genuinely shocked last night when they heard the news and they looked at that $185 figure and, kind of piled on that. But you had a post on the Bylog blog just a few days ago about Hunter and Peter and their eligibility. And, you know, it looked like you really saw this coming. And the amazing thing was in the comments section, you and another person almost predicted, you know, the exact suspension, how this would be announced and everything. So this is something you kind of saw coming, right?
Well, something like this was a lot more likely when and it's an issue that I kind of keep touching on when talking about this either on the blog or on Twitter, is that Peter Jerkin was cleared and played in the exhibition game. Mm-hmm. So if he was – if both of these guys were still sitting in the eligibility center waiting to get final amateurism clearance, he would not be allowed to play in that exhibition game even though it's, you know, more or less meaningless. So at that point, he had to have gotten some sort of decision, because – like a temporary certification to play in that game, mm-hmm. you know, the NCAA basically saying you may or may not be suspended, but it's an exhibition game. We'll let you just play in this one anyway. They just don't do that. So he had a reinstatement decision on October 29th, which normally includes, you know, if there will be exhibition games, allows the athlete to play in those because they're not going to be part of the suspension. So he'll still be sitting out the 9 regular season games, but he had to have gotten some sort of decision. And the only one that really made sense, unless Indiana was checking into something on their own, mm-hmm. was that he had gotten a final decision that included a suspension for the regular season.
I'm sorry, Greg. And one of the other interesting things I thought was, you know, this case goes back to 2011, which means obviously Tom Crean and everyone has known about this for a long time, and they still went ahead with, you know, recruiting these two guys and, you know, giving them scholarships and everything. Do you think that, you know, Crean and IU were pretty confident that, you know, this was a gamble worth taking and that ultimately the NCAA was going to rule on their side?
Do you mean rule on their side in the sense of clearing them completely or not? Ruling them permanently ineligible.
Clearing them, I guess. Yeah.
You know, I know enough about the compliance staff at Indiana and who's there. You know, Julie Krumer being, you know, somebody who worked at the NCAA and knows that. I think they knew kind of what the odds were. I think they knew that this was probably more or less like this would have been the worst case scenario, that they probably were not going to get ruled permanently ineligible. I mean, this wasn't kind of an Enos Kanter thing where
right.
You're going to end up losing the players completely. But I also, you know, don't think that the administration at IU would let the basketball staff, you know, basically blowing smoke at them, telling them, yeah, everything's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. I would suspect they're ready for it. And Crean, his comments, if you kind of look back through the summer, kind of bear that out in the sense of he, you know, knew it was coming. He's just kind of, well, we got to work through this process. We've been working on it, and we just got to wait for a decision. But there was a lot of coordination there. I mean, the fact that the compliance staff even went up to the headquarters and met in person with members of the basketball focus group at the NCAA makes it, you know, a lot more likely that they had a pretty good handle on what was going on. Even if this issue of Mark Adams being a booster kind of popped up more or less at the last minute.
Now, I'm not a law guy. I think I took one law class at IU, but I am a movie guy. And I saw The Blind Side, and in The Blind Side, Michael Orr is this big prospect, and he was taken in by this upper-class white family who went to Ole Miss, and they donated to the school. I don't know if you consider them boosters necessarily, but, you know, Michael Orr ended up going to Ole Miss and playing and starring there, and now he's in the NFL. How is this any different from that?
The only thing that I think might have made it different would have been that they ultimately adopted Michael Orr, and I know that, you know, Adams established legal guardianship over Perea, and that has changed changed the nature of the case. The other thing is that I don't believe you have the added thing of in the Orr case that the family was his coach as well.
Mm. That's true.
So it is slightly different in that, you know, Indiana and the doc referring to this interpretation from back in 2000, which basically says, you know, the a non-scholastic coach or an AAU coach can provide benefits so long as he's not a booster of a school. And I think that, you know, when you talk about somebody who's not involved in athletics at all, as I think might have been the case in the Michael Orr situation, that would have been a slightly different type of situation than where you have somebody who's only involved with the kids because of athletics.
John, we know the NCAA is all about precedent. When they make these kind of rulings, they look at, you know, other cases and really try and be consistent. And, you know, one of my biggest takeaways from this story is that this is really setting a dangerous precedent going forward. You know, if $185 makes Mark Adams a booster, do you think we're going to be seeing a lot more cases like this where people you might not have thought were a booster maybe 5-10 years ago will now be deemed, you know, kind of off limits by the NCAA?
I don't know if it's a dangerous precedent set so much in that this is a long-standing rule, this idea that, you know, the second you become a booster, you're a booster forever. And, you know, there's ways to become a booster that have nothing to do with money. I mean, one of the ways you become a booster is simply that you help steer kids to the college and that the college knows about it.
Okay.
So it really isn't so much about this, I think, the $185. I think the kind of bigger question for the NCAA is that are they going to make booster status the fulcrum in all these cases? Mm-hmm. Is this going to be how they're going to handle this third party influence problem? And I don't know if that's the best way to do it, because I'll tell you this, the guys who are, you know, working, you know, the guys in AAU basketball who are trying to break the rules, the really bad people,
right,
who are working with the coaches who are actively trying to cheat. And it's not everybody. It's probably not a majority of people. It's probably a very small group, but they're definitely out there. None of those guys are boosters, and they take great pains to avoid being tagged as boosters. They never donate money. They never buy tickets. They more or less stay away from, you know, events. They probably get their free tickets as AAU coaches from the, you know, from the coaching staff, but that's about it. So, you know, it's almost like, you know, if you're a booster, it's almost less likely that you're really, you know, actively trying to go out and break the rules in cases like this. So if they're going to make this about $185 that was donated, you know, 20 years ago, I'm not sure if that's the best thing. And I don't know sure if, you know, saying that Boone Pickens' $100 million at Oklahoma State would even still be the best way to decide whether or not he should be allowed to, you know, bring kids over, house them, set them up with schools, coach them in basketball, and then have them, you know, end up at the school in your backyard.
This whole thing just sounds ridiculous to me. I can't even think about it right now, because everything just doesn't make any sense to me. You know, looking at these penalties, Jerkin's going to have to pay only $250. Okay. Well, actually, that's a lot more than what the booster paid. But Perea has to pay back, you know, over $1,500. Where, you know, he's coming from, you know, not necessarily money, obviously. And where does he kind of get this money? Can he take that from scholarship that he was given? Or how does that work, you think?
So yeah, he could do, I mean, a number of different things. You know, if he was, unfortunately, both of these guys are not American citizens. Mm-hmm. If they were, or, you know, permanent resident aliens, if they were, then they would likely be, I think, on Pell Grants. I think that's safe to say. And then they would have gotten, you know, a big refund check that they could have used to help pay some of these penalties. And then IU could have used something like the Student Athlete Assistance Fund to kind of help them with some of their other expenses. But there's a couple things they could still do. They can use scholarship money. I mean, they could take out, you know, a little bit of student loan or something like that to help pay that back. Perea in particular could be put on a payment plan. The NCAA allows that, so we can get started on a kind of monthly thing, so it's not all, you know, $1,500 that he has to come up with before his suspension is up and he's able to play in a game. So they have some options to work around that, but it is a lot of money that they're going to have to pay back, especially Perea, for guys who, you know, it sounds like don't come from you know, a lot of means.
You know, I'm wondering what this kind of does with IU and the AHOPE organization as a whole going forward. Obviously, they can't communicate with Mark Adams for a year. And, you know, but like you mentioned, though, Mark Adams is not a guy who, you know, hides in the shadows. He's very visible, very accessible, you know. I don't think he's ever viewed himself as a booster. You know, I think this is really, this news really stunned him. Do you think that IU is going to be able to recruit kids from the AHOPE program in a year's time? Or do you think they're just going to kind of disassociate themselves completely with this and just try and move forward?
That's a good question, because, you know, if he's a booster based on a 20-year-old donation, because he's a booster for life, and he's not going to, you know, stop being a booster just because, you know, it's not like, well, you got punished for being a booster, so now you've lost your booster status. Right. So these issues are going to come up with any kid where, you know, he's bringing over and, you know, his organization is helping, you know, provide them with, you know, living expenses and, you know, educational expenses as well. So it is going to be a big issue for IU going forward. And I'm not, it's a good question how you solve that, because I don't know if you can really go into recruiting a bunch of kids knowing that, you know, they're all going to have to repay a bunch of money and then have to sit out 9 games whenever they start at IU. So I do think it's a big hindrance on them recruiting from the AHOPE program. The one thing that might change things is if Adams was to step back from the Indiana Elite program, mm-hmm. and just ran the AHOPE organization. That might change things in the sense that now he's no longer a coach. He's no longer, you know, involved in basketball. In a way, I mean, he's still involved, you know, bringing basketball players over, but he's not coaching them. He's not, you know, as actively involved in the recruiting process. And there's a potential the NCAA might see that differently and say, okay, yeah, now the organization can continue to, you know, fund these kids and they come to IU with no penalty because the booster who's involved with it is not involved with their basketball career as well.
Right.
Now, I guess my last question is just based upon the appeal. IU plans on appealing the NCAA's decision. And, you know, when I first saw this, I thought, oh, well, there's no way that they're going to change their mind on things. But, you know, you look this morning and Des Wells, who is a Xavier transfer at Maryland, he was originally ruled that he had to sit out this year because basically he was expelled from Xavier after a sexual assault allegation. But they actually never had proof that he did it. So, anyways, long story short, he went to Maryland and now is able to play. They changed their mind. I know these are two completely different cases, but is there any chance that, you know, that they actually might win this appeal?
Well, I didn't see that Des Wells news yet, and I'm pretty stunned that they won that appeal. But
yeah,
the big thing you have to remember with NCAA appeals is this isn't like, you know, appealing, like NFL guys appealing a suspension where Roger Goodell imposes the suspension and then you have to appeal to Roger Goodell. You're appealing to a whole different group of people. So the original penalty is set by the NCAA staff members who are required to work within guidelines that are set by, you know, whatever NCAA committee kind of oversees their area, which in this case is the Committee on Student Athlete Reinstatement. So that appeal now is going to go to that committee. So now you're not only working with a totally separate group of people, it's a totally different type of people in the sense it's now people who work at NCAA schools rather than at the national office, and people who aren't as tied to those guidelines. I mean, they still don't want to depart from them entirely because they set the guidelines and they want to maintain some consistency with them, but they also have a great deal more leeway to step outside these kind of standard penalties, like, you know, a 9-game suspension whenever there's, you know, X amount of money received as a benefit. So it's possible. The one thing that might be working against them is that they already got some relief from the repayment penalty, because, I mean, the benefits were into the, you know, $6,000 to $9,000, I think, and they're only going to be repaying a pretty small fraction of that. Still a lot of money, though, that they have to repay, but I'm not sure how that cuts. I'm not sure if that is going to be seen as, well, you already kind of got a break on in this case, or if it's going to be seen as the staff has already recognized that this, you know, the standard penalty that we would normally impose isn't appropriate. So let's take a harder look at another portion of the penalty, specifically the suspension.
And, you know, before you go, I'd like to kind of get your impression on, you know, Indiana University's compliance office as a whole. You know, I covered the team during the Kelvin Sampson days, and obviously we talked about that just about every day. And, you know, when that came down, they kind of cleaned house and, you know, really made an effort to be compliant and to be transparent. And I think Tom Crean has done a great job of that his first couple of years. And I think it's been, you know, one of his biggest emphasis over everything else is, you know, just not committing those types of mistakes that plagued the program before. Is this something that's, you know, completely different, maybe even was unavoidable, or is this kind of, you know, a little bit of a tarnish on the compliance program and, you know, something that should have been avoided?
No, I mean, I think, you know, I think you can draw parallels to, you know, what's happened at Kentucky since Calipari has been there in the terms of the kind of eligibility challenges that have faced some of his players coming in. You know, the job of the compliance office is not to make sure that they, you know, never get within, you know, 100 yards of a violation. I mean, the job of the basketball coach is, among other things, to win games. And to win games, he needs to use every tool at his disposal. So the job of the compliance office is to make sure that he's, you know, only using the tools that are allowed and to help him use those tools as effectively as possible. So it's a big staff. It's an experienced staff. They have, you know, people have a really good understanding of how the NCAA works and of, you know, NCAA rules. And I mean, if there's, again, it's I'd say the same thing about Calipari and Kentucky. The only thing you can ever fault the coach or the compliance office is in these types of cases is if they take too many of these risks, the players aren't able to play, and it ends up hurting the team on the court because, you know, as the secondary infractions report and everything from the NCAA in this case said, IU did a lot of due diligence here. Mm-hmm. They were researching this thing more or less straight for a year. They kept up on thing. It wasn't a situation where they kind of got an interpretation and then said, well, everything's okay here. We, you know, don't have to worry about this AHOPE program anymore. They kept on it. They kept looking into it. They found a problem even, you know, that went back to 2008 and, you know, imposed a penalty for it and, you know, corrected themselves on that. And then when it came to these two players, they worked to figure out what happened, worked with the NCAA, and, you know, decision didn't go their way, but they're going to follow it, and they did everything they could to get the best decision they could for the players.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, something I think that IU did a good job of staying on top of, and to their credit, you know, I think that's probably what's going to allow Hunter and Peter to play this season. If they hadn't self-reported it, do you think they could have maybe been forced to sit out the entire year?
I don't know, because I don't know, you know, what the NCAA might have been doing. I think it has to be recognized that, you know, both these guys are relatively high-level recruits. Mm-hmm. They could have been on the NCAA's radar. And after the ESPN article last year, I think it would be foolish to assume that the AHOPE program was not also on the NCAA's radar.
Right.
So if Indiana hadn't been on as on top of it as they were, you know, the result is probably that they get blindsided by this over the summer. Mm-hmm. And instead of getting a decision right before the exhibition game and then, you know, kind of getting a final decision and knowing what the suspension is before the season starts, maybe you see a situation like UCLA is dealing with now where it's not just that there might be a significant penalty, it's that the process of figuring out that penalty is now stretching into the regular season. So that may be where the most kudos can go to the compliance staff there, that they, you know, knew this was coming and they worked as hard as they could, took it down to the wire, but at the end of the day, they, you know, got the decision and got it before the season started, so the players don't miss any more games than they're going to be required to. And I also really, I mean, you know, I'm sure you guys do too, now that I'm not in the compliance world anymore, but even when I did, I really appreciate the, and I think they have to be commended for the openness. I mean, yeah. Both, you know, the documents that have released, the explanations. I remember last year, 2 years ago, was it when, you know, Julie Krumer got up there and explained Guy Marc Michel's eligibility, mm-hmm. and which was a very, you know, complicated situation. So that's the other thing. It's not just this kind of, you know, keeping things compliant through smoke and mirrors. It's a, you know, pretty transparent as far as compliance offices go, you know, when things are, you know, limited by privacy laws and things like that. And they do a good job of explaining to people kind of what they're doing and why they did it.
Yeah, definitely. The transparency is refreshing, especially considering, you know, what has happened the past couple of years. It is nice to have everything out in the open and no surprises in that regard. Well, John, thanks so much for coming on the show. You know, your insight's just incredible. Really appreciate it. And I hope IU fans aren't blowing up your Twitter account too much in the past 24 hours.
No, it's mostly not that. I mean, you know, I'm still getting a couple of things about college hockey from a little while ago. So, and I don't mind, you know, they want to shoot questions. I have a post up now about this with a couple of thoughts, so they can go have some comments over there on the Bylaw blog. And yeah, I'm happy to talk about this stuff because, you know, a lot of times they ask pretty good questions.
That's great.
You were the Nate Silver of the NCAA.
I wish. I mean, you know, if I could start predicting major infractions penalties, then, you know, that'd be like an entirely different line of work. I mean, that would be, that'd be something. But I wish it was, you know, I think everybody kind of wishes it was as predictable as that there was as much math involved with some of the NCAA stuff, but I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the New York Times would be after you pretty quickly if you could do that. But yeah, check out John on the Bylaw blog, athleticscholarships.net, and you know he's given you permission, so feel free to ask him questions on Twitter at Bylaw blog. You know, very knowledgeable, also an IU grad, so he'll take the time to answer your questions. John, thanks again for coming on the program. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Greg. Well, I think that'll do it for this episode of Podcast on the Brink. Great stuff from John and Dustin today. What'd you think?
Yeah, we got a lot of good insight. I'm kind of an idiot when it comes to law stuff, so I'm kind of glad to have both those guys on, give a little more in-depth analysis.
Nice Blindside reference, though. That was good. That was a pretty good comparison.
Thanks. I watch movies occasionally, so I'm glad I could show that.
You're a huge Julia Roberts fan. We all know this.
Oh, God, I love her.
All right, well, before we get too much into that, let's end this episode of Podcast on the Brink. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week after the Bryant game, so be sure to check back with Inside the Hall. Till then, for Greg Rosenstein, I'm Matt Dollinger. Have a good one.